Hi, this is Father Bill W. here in Austin, Texas, and welcome to the podcast. We have been working on Carl Jung and his connections with AA. This is number 8 and the final one in our series on Jung. Hope it's been helpful for you. Some pretty deep material that we've gotten into, and I'm afraid today is not going to be an exception. So bear with me. I think it's really important. It may be a stretch for some, but it pays off in the end. Trust me on that. Bill Wilson, you know, once referred to AA as a sort of spiritual kindergarten. Here's an excerpt from a letter he wrote back in 1954. He said, "We're only operating a spiritual kindergarten in which people are enabled to get over drinking and find the grace to go on living to better effect. Each man's theology has to be his own quest, his own affair." In other words, I think what he's saying is we need more than AA. AA is the base of our growth, the platform from which we launch. But we need to launch. And he went out and he experimented with any number of things, including LSD, but we'll save that for another podcast. But he was on the edge. He was concerned with how do people change. And that really drove him. How do you help alcoholics? And I've been in recovery, you know, going on 48 years. And I've been kind of driven by something similar. How do I help people find this spiritual connection that can really bring life to them and not just plodding along, you know, trudging the road of happy destiny, but kind of sailing along and having some fun as we do it. So my sponsor used to tell me, back in the day, he said, you got to be very careful of what he called a limited conversion. He said, many people in recovery come to settle for exactly that. They get just enough growth going in them that they're able to quit drinking or drugging, but they stop their growth really at that level. And I think if you can dabble in some of the works of Carl Jung and maybe even more importantly, some of the people who wrote about his work, people like Robert Johnson, Richard Rohr, a lot of folks in recovery follow Rohr, and he's been deeply influenced by Jung as well. So find the writers who speak to you, who you can understand, and then start going deeper on this spiritual journey. So in some earlier episodes, we talked about Roland Hazard, and he was the link between Jung and AA. Roland was one of Jung's patients. He relapsed, and Jung sent him basically on a spiritual journey. He said, "I can't help you anymore. Tried everything that traditional psychiatry had to offer, and you need something deeper. You need an experience of a psychic change, a conversion experience, something profound that is going to deeply alter the structure of your unconscious mind." Not exactly his words, but that's what he was saying in effect. And I believe that people today are just as much sent on that same spiritual quest. And it's really, if you boil it down, it's the hero's journey. Some of you may be familiar with that. It's been around since very ancient times and appears in just about every culture. And every hero starts the quest with a seemingly insolvable problem. I mean, like Wilson once said, something you can't get over, around, under. You have to go through, and everything inside of you is saying, "I don't want to do this. There's got to be another way." And there is no other way. And so the hero then begins his or her journey. The crisis can't be avoided. The inner kingdom is threatened with collapse. The story is always pretty much the same. Characters change, but it's really, really very similar in its composition. Everything's going to go to ruin if we don't act, if we don't do something. And so the hero steps forward and he does it. Always involves his leaving home. Often involves him going into the dark forest, the place that he's most afraid to go. You know, that's exactly where he's going to have to go. Kind of reminds me of the fourth step, hey? Go and face our dragons, fight our battles. If you're lucky, rescue a fair maiden, and then restore the kingdom to its rightful order. See, the kingdom of our souls is out of order. And that's where we either act or we kind of wallow in it. I think it was Kierkegaard who said, modern people have two choices. You can either stay with depression and not do anything, or you can go forward, take the hero's journey, and experience anxiety. There's going to be anxiety that's going to go with it. This is not an easy trip, hey? So it's the journey of recovery, and it's both outward, doing certain things on the outside, but it also has inner dimensions as well. So if you remember Jung's letter to Bill Wilson, he said in treating Roland, there were three ways that he could possibly have overcome an addiction like his. He said the first was an act of grace. And that's what he meant by that was a sudden shift in consciousness, some kind of an encounter with the divine, with that other world. Wilson had one of these, his fourth time in detox. That's what he experienced. And it was the collapse of his ego system and then an experience of grace. He said he felt the presence of God. And then that night, he didn't know exactly what it was, but he slept like a baby. Why? Because his conscious and his unconscious battles were over. Something had been settled and done, and he knew it. He was changed. There was no going back. The second, Jung said, was a personal and honest contact with friends. And he said, this is the one it looked like that Roland had chosen. The fellowship, a place where the loneliness, where the alienation, where the self-loathing could be shared, eh? Faced with others who had already begun to heal. What do they say? They say, yes, we were once like you were. Come in, do as we have done, and the change that happened in us can happen in you. Program of attraction. Third way, he said, was through the higher education of the mind, beyond the confines of mere rationalism. Fancy way of saying it, not just the rational mind, but the rational and the irrational mind. It's the joining of those two. That's the third way. And that's really the way of the steps, I believe, hey? That they are a map to the hero's journey for us. But only if we go deep, only if we are willing to really go the course and stay the course and change at the deepest levels of our being. So I think in AA, what we have done, and in other 12-step fellowships, is we have put those three parts that Jung suggested together into a package, that the grace can happen, but it may happen over time, or it may happen immediately, that we are in contact with earnest friends and honest discussions and joining into a fellowship. And we are slowly changing the depth of our conscious contact with God. So this is the 12-step journey, eh? Now, Jung, I think, can probably help us the most in looking at a higher education of the mind. See, Jung's gift is that he drew for us a map of the mind. It broke it down into the conscious and unconscious parts so we can do our work, especially our inner work. And what is this inner work? What do I mean by that? Well, that's Robert Johnson wrote a book he called Inner Work, and I've been using that for this series in part. Hey, it's a very, very good place to begin. And so Johnson says this: inner work is the effort by which we gain awareness of the deeper layers of consciousness and move toward integration of the total self. Inner work is going inside, gaining an awareness of the layers of our mind, particularly becoming conscious of the unconscious. And as we do that, integrating that into a total self. Again, our minds are both conscious and unconscious. In fact, they tell us that some 90 to 95% of the human mind is unconscious. But see, that little 5 or 10%, that's our ego. And it's very strong-willed. And it very much thinks it's in control of 90 to 99% of everything, you know? So the discovery of this unconscious, it's really only about 100 years old. Freud and Jung kind of worked on it together and made this discovery. And we're really just filling in the pieces of this, really just getting to know how profound this inner world really is. So I want to start this kind of summation chapter, you know, episode, with a little more in-depth look at the ego. Right? People have a hard time getting a hold of that. See, ego gets a bad rap in AA. I've been to hundreds and hundreds of meetings where, you know, ego is the problem, edging God out. You know, and people come away from that thinking, well, I should not have an ego. Well, if you don't have an ego, you're going to be psychotic. So you have to have an ego. An ego is my sense of self, the I-ness of me. That's a Latin word, just means I, my sense of who I am. But the trick is, what is the right size of the ego? Is it a humble ego? Is it a teachable ego? Or is it an unhealthy ego that is either inflated, thinks too highly of itself, or deflated, thinks too lowly of itself? And either one is really a prescription for disaster. So the part of that journey is getting a healthy ego in place. So we start off in the womb, the child that is to be born. It really has no ego. It experiences itself as divine. It has a need, you know, pulls on the umbilical cord, instant pleasure, instant floating, you know, gratification. Everything is revolving around it. And as addicts, we can relate to that. that's the immaturity that we get stuck in and have not outgrown. I'll never forget when I started getting into the field, I said I want to learn about the psychological makeup of alcoholics. And somebody said to me, well, go get yourself any good book on child psychology. You know, and what he meant by that is we are stuck. Our egos are stuck in seeing themselves as the center and not having grown sufficiently to let go of that central position and to become humble and teachable. All right. So we come into the world I don't know if you remember in high school, you probably had some of the romantic poets, and Wordsworth was one that I really enjoyed. And I hope you'll, I want to read a little bit of his thing on being born, coming into the world, right? And I want you to try to see the emergence of consciousness out of unconsciousness. Put it in that framework. Wordsworth didn't have that that map in front of him, those words to say it, but he said them even more beautifully than Jung could say them. So listen to this. He says, "Our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises with us, our life's star, hath had elsewhere its setting and cometh from afar, not in entire forgetfulness and not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come from God who is our home." We come from God, we have this human experience, and we go back to God. Now, why is that happening? I'm not exactly sure. Jung says that it's very, God is in a sense dependent on us for the realization of himself through us. And if you take that into the concept of the Trinity, it actually starts making some really deep sense that God experiences himself through us, realizes himself through us, and we realize ourselves through him. So there is a tremendous connection, tremendously important connection of where we are with our conscious mind, with what's happening at the depths of our unconscious mind. And Jung was the first one to develop the concept of the collective unconscious. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. Say, so we start off as a kid. It's wonderful. It's exciting. But then we have the business of growing up. And part of us grows up and part of us doesn't. That's always the case. And many of our problems, if we trace them back, you can trace them back to childhood. Leftover issues that were really never resolved. And so from time to time, this immaturity in us shows itself. I want what I want when I want it. Well, who's that? Well, it's His Majesty the baby. It's the 3-year-old, 4-year-old in us that really wants to throw a temper tantrum when the line at the grocery store is too long, when the person behind the counter takes too long. And then this immaturity really starts to show up. So through this process of actually painful experiences, not getting our way, recognizing that I have a baby brother who also has rights, and that when I hit him over the head with a stick, I get in trouble, all right? I learn that there's a place where I begin and where others leave off, okay? And so we build up an ego, a sense of self. We separate ourselves from our environment, from our mother, although it takes alcoholics much longer to do that, hey? And then we become both a public self and a private or a hidden self, what Jung called a shadow self. So there's the persona, the part that we show to the public, and there's the hidden part that we have deep within ourselves that we don't show to many people at all, oftentimes even to ourselves. So we're split, public, private, aware, unaware. And some of us are more split than others. And trauma, it seems, really compounds the split. If you were sexually molested as a child, the split is likely going to be deeper. If you were emotionally traumatized, the split is going to be deeper. I'm going to compartmentalize my life even more so. And it's going to be difficult to access some of these painful memories, try to stuff them down deep inside. But then what happens? Well, Jung says there's really two phases to life. The beginning phase, the first phase, is building up an ego, becoming a self, all right? And that's very important, you know? Very good. Get stars, get good grades in school. I am somebody. Atta boy, atta girl, way to go. That's the stuff. Very nice. Then around midlife, he says, suddenly all of the rules start to change. What had been all about building up now becomes all about taking down and letting go. Now I am really entering onto the spiritual journey of life. There was the first half where I build up a self, and now in the second half, I have to begin the process of letting go of that self. Both are really, really difficult. Here's Jung speaking about this process. He says, one cannot live the afternoon of life according to the program of life's morning. For what was great in the morning will be of little importance in the evening, and what in the morning was true will at evening become a lie. Wholly different set of rules to become a self and then to begin this inner journey, this quest, this hero's journey for realigning this self with what Jung called the self, with a capital S. Hey? And here's the rub. The changes we need to make are not so much at the conscious level, but again, at the unconscious level. So Jung also said this. He said, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. See? Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life, and you will call it fate. So, what is the unconscious? And here I want to turn to John Sanford, another Jungian analyst. He's got a nice statement here. He says this, the unconscious is not only the basement of our minds, into which we place the discarded material of our own lives. It is also the ocean out of which our conscious lives have sprung and over which the ship of the soul sails its course through life. Jung described the ego as a little cork floating on the great sea of the unconscious. And he was very insistent that the cork is equal to the sea, that the ego is equal to the unconscious. But if you're a little cork, you don't feel like you are. And what it takes is a hero's journey to come and to see yourself in your fullness as you truly are, all right? Not separate from, but one with. Eh? So the sea, this unconscious, is alive. It's our life force. It's our libido. And it's not just sexual. It's the energy. It's the life force. It's the Dionysian energy that is inside of us. It's 100,000 volts of electricity. And if we're in touch with that, then we're alive. And if we're not in touch with that, then everything starts getting gray and dull and boring, you know? And as addicts, we have to find that place. We have to find access to that place and be in touch with that place and draw from that place. Otherwise, the lure of drinking, the lure of drugs will just be too much for us. We have to find something that feels better than alcohol and drugs. What is that? That's God as he reveals himself to us through the unconscious mind. All right? So Jung said, the ego is the center of consciousness, but there's also a center to our unconscious as well. And this he called the self with a capital S. Some might call it the Buddha mind or the Christ mind. It is the collective unconscious. It's the part of the divine that lives within each and every one of us. And here's the trick. It wants to become conscious. The unconscious is seeking consciousness through ourselves. And that is the real purpose of the soul, to connect the unconscious and the conscious. So I go back to Sanford once again. He says, from the point of view of psychology, the soul is that within us that connects our consciousness to our inner depths. The soul's primary function is relationship. And the relationship between the ego and the inner world is the most important relationship of all. For if this is broken, relationships with other people and with God are impossible. Without the living connection to ourselves that the soul makes possible, we're like a ship without a rudder or an uprooted tree. Such a person becomes ill or brutal or falls into despair or seeks substitutes in alcohol or drugs. Now, in that little episode on religion, that used to be the way that we were connected, but it doesn't work any longer in 98% of the cases. Hey, religion is in very bad shape. So what Jung says is we have to find our own connection to this source. And how do you do it? He says, listen to your dreams. They're trying to tell you something. Watch the circumstances of your life. There are no accidents. Synchronicity is all about us. Hey, your life is trying to tell you something. Wake up, pay attention, see what it is. And maybe most of all, Jung said, listen through your imaginations. Get to know the powers, the archetypes, the voices that are alive and living within us deep in the unconscious. As addicts, we know the addict voice. Almost all of us know the critic voice. And we allow those suckers to talk to us all the time. Well, find some of the other voices. Find the inner child. Go and comfort and heal her. Hold her in your arms and feel what that is like. Jung was all about experience. You're not going to get this thing in your head. You're going to get it in your gut, and you're going to get it as you do it. And I would add that through two-way prayer, it's a way to experience the voice of God as it manifests itself in our own lives, following that voice that wants us to become fully ourselves, to grow to our fullest potential. Becoming an individual, he called it the process of individuation. And sometimes that can get a bad rap in 12-step as well. They can call it terminal uniqueness. Well, I think the truth is that you and I are unique. There's only one of you, only one of me. And deep within you and me is God trying to become himself or herself, to live out the reality through us. That is the spiritual journey. That's the quest. It's our quest. It's also God's quest. The big book says the great reality is within, and I think it is within indeed, and it wants to come into the world through us. When it's all said and done, I think that's going to be the question. Did we allow it to come through us? Jung was once asked if we as a species were going to make it, and he replied, only if enough of us do this inner work. It doesn't take anyone, everybody, but it does take those of us who are called to do it, and each of us has a choice on whether we're going to go on that quest or we're going to go home and bitch and moan and suffer and not grow, not change. So kind of some deep stuff. Hope it was helpful. Finishing up this series on Jung, should be back in about 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks, with another series. And love to hear from you. Give me a buzz if you get a chance. Take care. Bye-bye. God bless.